the General Practice Podcast from Ockham Healthcare, supporting innovation in general practice.
Well, I'm delighted to be joined today by three illustrious guests from Hertfordshire General Practice. What I'll do is I'll get you to introduce yourselves as we go around, because I know you have a variety of roles. So let's start with you. So Dr. Nigel Fraser. Nigel, tell us a bit about what you do.
Hi, Ben. I'm an LMC secretary and I also chair Hertfordshire General Practice, which is the collaborative of general practice in Herefordshire. And I also sit on the ICB as a partner member for primary care.
Thanks, Nigel. And also Dr. Mike Hearn, who is... Well, you tell us, Mike. You're like the engine behind Hertfordshire General Practice, aren't you?
Well, that's a very nice thing to say, Ben. I'll take that one. So, yeah, I'm a GP. Always to say that first, but I do that one day a week. And the rest of the week, I'm the managing director for the Federation, Torus Healthcare. Although in this context, though, we're very much talking now around Hertfordshire General Practice and working as a collaborative. It's not about the Federation. It's how we work together. My other role is I chair the Place-Based Medical Leadership Forum in Herefordshire.
And we're going to be focusing this episode on general practice data and analytics. And we're also joined by Connor Price. And you're a bit of a specialist in this area, aren't you, Connor?
Well, I'd like to think so, but, you know, it's always nice hearing someone else say it. So I'm a chief information officer for Hertfordshire General Practice, which is actually quite different when we see what's happening across the country. These types of roles are very ICB-led. They're very sort of secondary care. And I think we definitely took an approach of recognizing the need for it. And I've been privileged to be in that role. And then because of that, we've got a subsidiary, which I'm the managing director of that, which is absolutely around primary care analytics and how we deliver that across general practice. And then I've kind of got a couple of hats where I'm a chair of a digital transformation lead forum across the country for the Confed. So really bringing in that sort of general practice, primary care, digital and data approach. So quite fortunate to be across a couple of different areas.
So you've given us a kind of preview of where we're going there, Connor. So on your journey, you've gone from, okay, we need to do something with primary care, general practice data, and have gone from that to now having this wholly owned subsidiary within the Federation called Primary Care Analytics. So what we're going to do, we're going to have two episodes with you guys. The first one's going to be, how did you get from zero to actually getting general practice data to a place where it was actually useful locally and meaningful? We're going to do that today. And then next time, what we'll do is we'll focus on primary care analytics and look at that from a kind of broader perspective. How are you hoping that'll progress and how that plays into the national agenda? So let's start at the beginning. Mike, maybe let's start with you. So when did you first think, okay, right, we need to do something with general practice data here in Herefordshire?
I guess this goes back to the very start of when we started up the Federation, really, trying to work across all practices. And we recognised that kind of how we look at the patient record, how we look at coding, and how we work together collaboratively across general practice was really key to getting that right. And obviously, when you start doing anything at scale, one of the things we needed to do was to demonstrate our worth and the impact that we were having. So use of EMIS across all of our practices led us in a way to think around data sharing early on.
How many practices are we talking, Mike? And how early is early?
So at that point, we were talking 24 practices. And this is now about 10, 11 years ago that we're talking of the time period that we were looking at this. So we set up the EMIS data sharing agreement. So we did that across all practices. So we could set up it was an MSK project actually to try and reduce the impact on secondary care, but it enabled us to have a continuum on the EMIS record between our at scale service and what was happening in practice. But importantly, it was a question of then how do we get the coding right? And therefore, how do we then start getting some analytics around some of this, which was obviously key. And that, I think, is really where some of this started and our initial thinking began, given particularly the variability across coding and analytics that was in place at that time.
So a lot of federations, I remember, you know, especially in that time period around 10 years ago, wanted to do that, right? They wanted to get the information together. So there were two issues, I think you're right, that people found. One was, how did you persuade all 24 practices to share their data in the first place? Because I think there are still places now that struggle with that. And then second, how did you solve that issue of when we look at the data, it's like apples and oranges, and how do we get to a place where we're comparing apples with apples?
I think the first thing really was around trust. And this was general practice wanting to do it for itself rather than being told to do it. So ownership of this, I think, was really key. I think if we'd been asked to do that by the PCT, as it was then, or CCG, we'd have struggled more, being honest, with that trust. That was the key element, really, of taking that forward. The variability is something which is you know, let's be honest, it continues on across general practice. But actually having some data which can demonstrate that has been effective over the years to try and put in some of the solutions. But that initial trust to try and opening up, what is it you do on your own record, can't underplay that enough.
What was the LMC sort of perspective on that? Do you remember back at that time, Nigel? Was the nervousness around that sharing of data, especially with the Federation, because sometimes Federations, people are nervous about them.
Yeah, absolutely. And we took quite a lot of legal advice at that time, actually, through the LMC. So we really wanted to give practices the reassurance that what they're doing was both legal and right. We all knew we wanted to share data. We had quite a bit of maturity around sharing of other data prior to this. So there was the prescribing data. We actually used to come together and discuss that, which I think we were a little bit ahead of our time with that as well. But no, absolutely. So the getting it right, getting it legal, giving absolutely cast iron reassurance to the practices was really important role for the LMC, actually, to make sure that individual practices and individual GPs knew that it was all above board.
Was there a cell that you used, Mike? Because I think you're right. You know, sometimes it's if the system wants it, it's like the sort of response can be negative. Whereas did you use a like, if you give us this data, then these are the things we'd potentially be able to do for you?
My recollection really was that the whole basis of starting up a federation at that time was going to depend on the success of the initial project that we did. And whilst that was a rather risky strategy, that's what it was. And I guess since practices had invested in getting the federation going, I guess they were also invested in taking forward the first project. And as part of that project, data sharing was a key part of that. And when we got to the Prime Minister's Challenge Fund and started doing what is now the enhanced access, then that really played an increasingly prominent role in our ability to show how general practice can work together collaboratively across the system, which I think until that time was probably quite unusual in many parts of the country. Some areas where they were doing this, I think Prime Minister's Challenge Fund was a good opportunity for those areas to start expanding that. But we all had a slightly different approach to that. And I think we immediately chose the at-scale route was something that fitted with our setup and our ability to do that across Herefordshire.
Talk us through that development then. So you kicked off the data sharing, you're doing it for the MSK project. I assume that went okay. And then you went into the Prime Minister's Challenge Fund and started using it around access. So what was that development like and what kind of benefits did you start to see?
From a coding point of view, what we had to see was trying to encourage all practices to use the same templates. That had been variable use before anyway, with things like enhanced services. So people were trying to collect the same codes, but they weren't doing the same templates. And I guess that was a bit of a shift with regards to how we managed that MSK. And then the Prime Minister's Challenge Fund, which had a number of different projects in it, but particularly the improved access as it was at the time. So it did involve working directly with EMIS, trying to think about how we can use the various systems that they had within that to try and work across the EMIS system. So we had to still work as separate organizations, but what we wanted to ensure is that the record was a continuum. And that was challenging, being honest, really, with how that's done and still has its challenges today with how that works across organizationally. It can be a little clunky. So that was one of the things that we had to try and work with practices on to try and ensure that they kept some ownership and trust in the whole process. But of course, it was extra appointment capacity and it was extra support for them, which in itself was a positive. We tried a number of different schemes out where we could use this. So we set up clinics in schools where we tried to address some of the teenage pregnancy stuff and contraception in schools. Whilst that didn't get commissioned on a long-term basis, primarily because of funding issue, the concept was very positive. And that kind of ability to not only be able to access the patient's record, but to also have effectively a mobile way of doing so and setting up a mobile GP service was really, that was the conceptual time when we started some of that stuff up.
How did the infrastructure develop? So Connor, is this where you came in and did you develop a team or did you use capacity that already existed at the CCG? How did that work?
I mean, it was an interesting one. It certainly has come over time. So what Mike was saying was almost sort of contained within the capacity within Taurus at that point. And it wasn't even necessarily a conscious thing. It was just that this is part of a program of work. We need to include that. We need to do this. I came into a very different role. I came into a train hub perspective and, you know, as a project manager. So it was very, very different. It wasn't even then defined as this is the capacity we're going to set aside for this particular work. We had an individual internally who was trying to get the contractual submissions together. So there was a bit there. But the wider piece then of how do we get these templates right, how we get the coding right, how do we bring all that together, came a bit later. It came from the CCG at the time saying, we haven't necessarily got the capacity internally. We haven't got access to the practice data. You've got a trusting relationship and are in a position to sort of offer back office functions. Can we utilize that? We'll save the practices time by submitting contractual information on their behalf, and they then got to do it. And obviously then the CCG's paid for that function, which allowed us then to start to think, oh, actually, we can afford to do things slightly differently. We've got funding coming through specifically for a data role or a data service that aids both the CCG plus the practices, and then internally Taurus as well, to be able to provide a bit of capacity to it. And, you know, over a year or two, it was kind of like, we can't manage the ever-growing data side of it now and the training hub and everything else. So we need to set that aside and do something about it. And I think that was the sort of turning point, really, of actually starting to see the value of what data could do. We could demonstrate the impact that was being had. We could save practices time in terms of having to run reports themselves, as well as then building that relationship with the CCG around as other things come on board. And as we start to look at even then the sort of versions of PHM back then, that all sort of came to fruition. And it was almost by luck more than anything else that was just, there was one thing at one point in time that was needed, and it sort of blossomed out of that, really. The fascinating thing I find is that we had such a sort of perfect scenario in Herefordshire where the trust was there, the need was there in terms of, like Mike was saying, around the services that were being delivered. It made absolute sense to be able to share data, to be able to understand from a patient perspective what the requirements were. The support around coding and templates to get some form of standardization in place. Working across the country now, actually, it's fascinating how we don't see that in too many areas. And I think the good thing is we took the opportunity when we had it to really make the most of it. And obviously that's what's sort of grown and grown since then.
Were you conscious, Mike and Nigel, of that kind of inflection point where you went from, we've got the data that we then use for our shared service delivery, to one where we're now collecting data from practices and feeding that into CCG or into the system on behalf of practice? And was there any nervousness around that? Because I guess at that point, the data that you're supplying is potentially being used around performance management and financial returns for practices.
I think we always felt in control of that. It comes back to that trust bit as well. And we communicated what was necessary. The power is in the data. So actually, there's a great advantage for practices. You know, we've all been in the situation with winter pressures, or you could choose a number of different ad hoc funding streams which come along. When all the data, the existing data in the system, all seems to come out of secondary care, and therefore all the justification seems to come from secondary care for moving resource that way. Whereas actually, you start developing the argument and gaining data from the out-of-hospital space. Actually, that's where probably this investment needs to be. And actually trying to support that with some figures and the data is actually critically important. So actually sharing with the wider system is really important. It's just making sure that we're sharing the right stuff and that we feel that we've got control of that, rather than it's being sucked out and it's being used as a performance management tool.
What was it like from your perspective, Mike?
When I reflect back, I don't think, certainly I realised, I don't know whether collectively we realised, the importance of data and how it would evolve. At that point, yeah, we weren't talking about PCNs or groups of practices working in the way that we're looking at that. We weren't talking about integrated care systems. This was much more around general practice, demonstrating its worth, but also demonstrating what we do well with patients. And certainly at that time, I was very conscious that there was a huge variability in how general practice approaches coding. I think the approach that we've been able to put in place is, how can we make it easy for clinicians to use those right codes? And having an understanding of general practice plays a key part in that. And I think that's, I guess, where things have developed and evolved, is us building on that. And of course, as we've seen now with the development of thinking much more around population health, as Colin was saying, it is very much around now using that data much more effectively and actually leading the system very much with the general practice data, because the quality of it is fantastic if you get it right. The challenge we have is it's not always pulled together on behalf of the system. It is often secondary care as a starting point. So being able to have this in place has made a huge change for us locally in our approach to data. It is, let's start with general practice data for much of the population health data. Albeit, we still struggle with the challenge of the markers of success of a health system are often seen in secondary care as a starting point.
I really get that point about, if you can play general practice data into the system, then it strengthens the visibility of what's going on, it strengthens the voice, all of those things. How did that progression happen and where did it get to? What kind of information did you get to the point that you were producing to go into the system?
One of the things we did, and this is where I think Connor and I particularly, this thing started to move forward, was when we started to look at appointment data across general practice. And we started working with other suppliers around the country, and they produced some really good dashboards. They're really kind of very positive and really look the part. But our big challenge was getting general practice to really adjust their appointment systems to reflect the dashboards that were being developed. Through these conversations, it became clearer to us, I think Connor particularly, I would say, was the fact that we could actually do this ourselves in a way that engaged our practices more effectively, gave us the data that we needed without necessarily needing to work with others, because actually we have that expertise that was evolving and developing, but we also importantly have the trust. I think that's how it evolved, really.
I think on that as well, the bit that I think was so important for what we were doing in that time around the appointments and activity and the idea of business intelligence, you know, it wasn't about just having a dashboard. And that has completely and utterly stuck with me and what we do now as well, is when we had gone to external suppliers and we had a dashboard, we found that the practices just, they look great, they were pretty, they said the right thing, but there isn't the time, not always the capability to really get what they're telling you from a dashboard perspective. And actually what we could bring into that then was not only that expertise around using the system, putting the data, creating reports, whether that be tabular or whether that be in Power BI, but actually we were people from general practice. And so actually what we were offering was then this, we understand what this data is saying and how you can use it differently. And actually even to the point then of, it's not just around changing these things. It's reword this slot type here and we know what that slot type is trying to say. And you had the experience to understand the granularity of it isn't just a case of always looking at a dashboard, and it needed that people approach to be able to support it and really bring it up. And that's what we've spent more time on over the years since then, is bringing a people function to help and support and deliver, as opposed to just putting out more and more dashboards. I think that was what was so important for us, and we were able to bring that actually. So that solidified the importance of it, was both sides of it.
How did that develop? Most places they would start with, you know, we have a data analyst, and it never really gets beyond that. Be interested to know how your function developed and what it kind of looks like now.
It's so much to do with the people that you've got. From the general practice perspective, definitely at that point, and I'd say even now, you'd struggle, but people in practice don't really identify as analysts. They're IT leads, they're QoF leads, they're practice managers. They're people that use the system and can pull data out of it. And they are absolutely analysts, because they then go and do something with it, but they don't know they're analysts. So that was a really interesting bit. So the people that we were sort of bringing in were less around the analytical and more around the really understanding general practice and the sort of nuances that it brings and how to sort of navigate conversations internally and what a patient's going to feel and how you sort of work with a clinician. So we developed it on the basis of people that understood general practice inside out. And that then allowed you to have the conversations and build it up further and be able to bring the data into that space. Over time, then what you get is more informed people interested in what it can bring, but also then sort of recognizing that any role brings that function to it as well. And it's just how it's sort of nurtured. And I think the other thing then is that us at the time, even myself, I was coming from more of a transformation and change and wanting to make a difference, and data was the best avenue to do that. For me, I feel it was the right place to start. We were coming from, this is about general practice and building up capabilities within general practice. That's where it started and developed into then. Now we look around and we've got, you know, I've got data scientists in the team that aren't from practice, but it's like, we know how to harness that now because of the sort of general practice legacy and where it was born from, really.
So where are you up to now? What's the information that you're able to provide back to practices, and what is information you provide about general practice into the system? What does that look like now?
We can look at it in a variety of ways. So from a data perspective, you know, the sorts of things that we provide back to practice are as you'd expect, you know, some of it contracts. There's the financial incentive there. There's the motivation there. It helps you keep on top of what you need to from a local and national level. So whether that's YIF and the DES and QoF, to lezzers and lizzers and all that. So you've got all that bit. I guess the bit we've tried to do there is factor in how would I like to see it if I was in practice? How do I make this as clean, simple, and easy as possible to understand? And also that it's somewhat accurate and that it correlates with national data sets, because that's always an interesting one. So we've got all of that bit, and we can talk people through how to change the coding and all that. And then we do a lot around, I say PHM. PHM is the sort of methodology. So the idea of population health management and identifying cohorts that might need interventions or support or a different way of approaching their situation, whether that's medically, holistically and all that. So we do a lot of work then around being able to identify those patients. But actually, we're trying to bring the, how do we help people use that? You know, it's not always the best utilized because PHM, and we need to do more around actually supporting the use of that further. And then you've got the inequalities bit that feeds into it. So using that, but then obviously looking through a lens of deprivation or exclusion in one way or another and bringing that in. But we've sort of learned a lot about that over time. So it's them being able to explain what that means. How does a patient in this area, you know, are they disadvantaged to a patient in that area, and how we can go out to the community, and how do we make some of the interventions simple, but being able to explain that. So you've very much got a contractual perspective. You've got a PHM perspective. We do conditional sort of stuff. So whether that's diabetes and being able to have a focus on what's your current baseline, opportunities to be had through different pathways or through pre-diabetes and all that sort of stuff. So we've done a couple of different ones around condition specific ones. So you've got the dashboard data that we can provide back, which is anything within the system really. And then the other side to sort of information is that how we distribute that and how we build it up from a sort of cultural and trust and development perspective is helping them people know how to do certain things, whether that's within the system, whether that's actually understanding what the data is saying, but also then being confident with it, knowing how to make an impact off the back of it. And then the cultural bit of really seeing the value of why general practice data is so important and actually why that should be shared wider. So, you know, our approach is absolutely sort of being able to provide those types of dashboards, being able to provide the insights and support and development, as well as them being able to provide sort of information up and down around why we need to change the space around information and primary care data in general.
How has it helped you, Nigel, in your ICB role or in your work across the system?
The data is extremely valuable. There's quite a lot of system ignorance about what actually happens in general practice and in primary care. I say that people are very in-depth knowledge of some areas, but actually it's a bit of a mystery generally to some board members, what the day-to-day activity is in general practice, what are the pressures we're under, why we behave like we behave. So the data is quite empowering from that point of view. So we've had development sessions at the ICB where we've presented some of the primary care data. And I think it's been really eye-opening to board members about the scale of some of the activity that goes on and what that means for the system and how important a player general practice is within the whole system if you look at the scale of the contacts and the influence that has. And I guess also the impact on partner organizations, so the other trusts within the system. So we've seen quite a lot of left shift activity, and I don't think they really grasped the scale of what was coming across to general practice until we produced the figures. And that has enabled us to work contracts in a different way so that we can capture, we can have joint budgets, we can then move the percentage of that budget as the work moves out of the hospital. We've started that with phlebotomy, and I think that's the future, really. We're not going to resist and repel left shift. We have to embrace it, but make sure the resource comes. And without the data, you're simply not going to be able to make a reasonable argument with that. So very empowering. And when questions are asked, you know, if you've got the data, you are always in a much more powerful place.
Well, it's fascinating stuff. It's really interesting talking to you because it's like you kind of all go, well, we got to this place, but we weren't conscious we were doing it, but we've ended up there. But then I know you must have realized that at some point because you've then gone on to form this thing called Primary Care Analytics, which is not just working in Herefordshire, but I know you're starting to support other places. And we're going to talk about that next time. For people listening today who are interested, if people want to find out more or get in touch, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, I mean, around PCA is definitely, we've got a website, which is great. And that's obviously, as you'd expect, primarycareanalytics.co.uk. LinkedIn, I think we find there's a good place for, you know, either looking for me or for Primary Care Analytics on there as well, which there's a lot of information around what we do. And obviously we're trying to be quite active in terms of gathering some of that attention of what's good and how we can sort of work on that further as well. So I think they're sort of two main places to get. But other than that, by all means, reach out to me because I'm more than happy to have a chat around how we can help other areas.
Okay, great. Well, I'll put your contact details into the show notes, Connor, so people can get in touch, and we'll link up your website as well so people can find that. And I look forward to talking to you next time to find out about Primary Care Analytics and how that's developing.
Thank you.
The General Practice Podcast from Ockham Healthcare, supporting innovation in general practice.